Welcome to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How are you today, Seth?
Good. I should sound better. I have a new setup.
Yeah. You went all out with the Shure microphone. Is that how you pronounce it?
Shure microphone, and Jeff Benjamin, our audio, well, video audio guy, recommended a Focusrite thing and a Cloud thing, so everything should be smooth as silk.
All right. And if it works well on this side, then I'm going to upgrade with the same setup, so let us know what you think about the audio this week. Plenty of stuff to talk about. It was a massive week for Tesla news. You had the Tesla Autonomy event on Monday. We had the Model S and S upgrade, drivetrain upgrade, and few other upgrades on Tuesday. Then the earnings on Wednesday. So it was big start of the week for us. We're going to get into all that this week, and we're going to dive straight in because we don't have a sponsor this week. If you guys want to sponsor us, let us know. We're looking for cool companies in the green space. All right, let's start out with the earnings, even though it was the last thing that happened this week. I think that's where we're going to, what most people want to talk about. If you guys have, if you're watching on live on YouTube, don't hesitate to ask question. We're gonna try to look at your question to, if we can, throughout the show or at the very end of it. So the earnings came out on Wednesday, a little bit late, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it wasn't great. If we look based on the expectations, Wall Street was looking at $5.8 billion in revenue. Tesla came in at $4.5 billion, so way down on revenue, which is pretty rare for Tesla to miss that big on revenue. We knew that revenue was going to be way down because deliveries were way down, and Tesla, most of Tesla's revenues come from vehicle deliveries, so that makes sense. But for some reason, Wall Street still saw a higher ASP per price per vehicle, and it was way down. So that's basically based on the mix of sales. Model 3s represented most of the sales, and in previous quarters, Tesla was selling the higher version of the Model 3. In Q1, they introduced the standard Range Plus battery pack that apparently it was a bigger part of the sales that people anticipated, even though Tesla also introduced the Model 3 in Europe during that time, and only the higher-end version of the vehicle were delivered there. So it was more difficult than we thought to, than Wall Street thought, at least, to understand that mix of vehicles of Model 3s. As for the earnings, Tesla had a loss of $4.10 per share, which is also a way bigger loss than anticipated by Wall Street, which they were looking at $1.21 per share. So big loss there.
Yeah, I mean, the takeaway for me, and I think a lot of others, is that everybody expected Tesla to have a bad quarter. I mean, they pretty much signaled that last month, but they didn't think it was going to be this bad. Mm-hmm. And as a lot of people pointed out, and as you know, Tesla kind of enunciated, like their first 2 months, they didn't really sell much of anything, and they kind of hit a cash crunch.
Or they didn't deliver much of anything.
They didn't deliver much. I mean, they produced plenty, but they weren't their incoming cash was like almost nothing because most of their inventory was on a boat. So at the end of the second month of the quarter, they had almost sold nothing, and they had produced a lot, and their cash position was kind of dire. And I think that's what, as we know now, led to a lot of these erratic, felt like erratic decisions, mm-hmm. Closing down retail, then opening up retail again,
mm-hmm.
All the different price fluctuations, which, you know, kind of confuse buyers and make buyers hesitate. You can see that, like, having no cash for the first 2 months of the quarter come in, like, all of a sudden you're starting to, like, you know, have to put off payments and whatever. And I don't think they're in a dire position or anything, but it certainly looked like if everything didn't work out, like they couldn't make deliveries into Europe, for instance, or China, and they didn't start, you know, making moves in the U.S. to start selling some inventory, that their cash position was getting a little scary.
Yeah, if we go to the numbers real quick, Tesla's cash position went down to $2.2 billion. I think it's down from like the last one. Well, the cash position is down like 1.5, mostly because of the $900 million that they had to repay in bond payment. So yeah, if you start looking at it based on delivering most of their vehicles after in the last 10 days of the quarter or something like that.
Right. They said they had delivered almost none of their estimated deliveries until the last 10 days of the quarter.
Yeah.
Is that 10 days of the quarter?
Something like that. So it means that before the last 10 days, Tesla's cash position was way, way down. They still went down like 1.5 billion. So sorry about that. Yeah. So cash position now 2.2, which is not that bad. I remember. Well, now that I say that, I think it's two CFOs ago, so it might not be even worth mentioning at this point. But because it was the CFO coming from Google, I don't remember his name, but he mentioned that Tesla likes to have at least $1 billion in the bank at 2.2, though. So they are 100% over that. So it's not that bad of a situation, but they certainly need to return to being close to cash flow positive or cash flow neutral, really. And they weren't close to that this quarter with a net loss of $700 million. It's pretty bad. But there were a lot of one-time capital expenditures in that during that quarter, especially to upgrade the Model S and X drivetrain production line, I should say.
Right, and that was a capital expenditure that wasn't really, well, obviously they didn't telegraph that ahead of time because they didn't want people to think that there was an upgrade coming, so you know, the Osborne effect. But that was a big expense that wasn't really predicted.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of those little things, and also like the, you know, getting ramping deliveries in Europe was a big expense that they didn't really anticipate, and I imagine China as well. And then of course, like announcing the $35,000 car in the U.S. and then pulling that back. I know the margins on those cars are quite low, even though they didn't start delivering those until I think after the quarter was over.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of the Model 3 margins, it went down to around 20%. So it went down quarter over quarters, but it's still pretty good. They're looking to increase that, of course, as they expand. A few things that was released throughout the conference call that came after the release of the earnings. Jérôme Guillen, the now president of automotive at Tesla and also the head of the Tesla Semi program, confirmed that the Tesla Semi production is delayed until next year. So we kind of saw it coming for a while because Tesla stopped referencing the production of the Tesla Semi. But originally in 2017, when they did launch the program, well, when they did unveil the program, because they were already working on that for a while, they said that they aimed to start production in 2019, but they didn't update the timeline for over the past 2 years, well, 18 months or so. And now they confirmed that it's pushed to next year. Jerome still said that he's very happy with the program, that the trucks are, he's happy all the trucks are testing right now. A quite amazing success, he said. And they are still testing them maybe with a full load capacity to try to tune it for production, for the production version. Couldn't confirm where it's going to be produced. He only mentioned the batteries and the drivetrain, which he says are going to be produced in Reno. And Gigafactory 1 in Nevada, which we already knew because the drivetrains anyway are Model 3 drivetrains, which are already being produced in Gigafactory 1, and the battery packs, well, looks like soon enough all of Tesla's battery packs are going to be produced in Gigafactory 1. We'll talk about that more later. Other things that came out of the conference call, the new insurance program. So we've been talking about that for years now. Tesla getting in the insurance world. They started it with the Insure My Tesla program, but that was more of a partnership with existing insurance companies.
Liberty Mutual, I believe.
In the U.S., it was Liberty Mutual, but they had a bunch of different companies in different markets. They hired a guy from Liberty Mutuals to work on their own program, which might be on like a fully separate insurance company owned by Tesla, and not just a custom design program in partnership with insurers. That's what it sounds like.
And we'll find out in a month, supposedly.
Well, that's on Elon's time, so who knows?
Right.
But yeah, Elon said next month, and he called it more compelling than anything else. Of course, where that's coming from, it's coming from a lot of owners complaining about the rates that they're getting, the premiums that they have to pay on their cars, having trouble just finding a decent rate. And Elon's response before was simply, well, if your insurer is not giving you a good rate, just go with another insurer. But some studies I've found that on average, yeah, Tesla is more expensive to insure than other cars. Though some owners have found some pretty good deals, so it's not like a blunt statement anyhow. But he wants to also incorporate the fact that that how autopilot is evolving, is becoming better, and all it's, since it's an active safety feature in the car, it can prevent accident and should ultimately reduce your premiums. I would argue that Sentry Mode now should also be taken into account for insurers. I think long term, it should reduce any kind of damages when the car is parked.
Yeah, absolutely, and not just directly with, you know, when people can see the people who did it and theoretically get their stuff back, but indirectly will be a much bigger help, because Teslas are going to start to get branded with the idea that all these cameras all around the car are on. Thieves are going to start to know that, and they're going to avoid Teslas theoretically, which, you know, that's kind of the whole idea of having the Sentry Mode. Isn't just to catch the guy who just broke your window, like, that's not going to pay back for your window.
Well,
save you any money.
Not for that specifically, but in the case of someone backing into you in a parking lot and just leaving, for example, then you can catch the plates or something, and then it's going to be their insurance that's going to pay for it. And in some cases, they could also get some fine or even some criminal. Yeah, because hit and run, sometimes it's criminal offense.
I think a lot of times, instead of getting the money directly, overarchingly, the community, the world, is going to start to understand that Teslas are recording you.
It's going to deter further damage. Right. Yeah.
So I think that's going to help. And, you know, I think one of the most interesting parts of the, you know, it was kind of like a digression with the insurance thing. It was a question asked by an analyst. Was that he said that they're going to have better information than insurance companies, and that depending on how dangerously you drive, they can adjust the premiums accordingly. Which that to me is going to be interesting. You know, there's going to be some privacy concerns. It sounds like Tesla's going to say, "Oh, you know, you just drove over 100 miles per hour. Your premium just went up." You're like.
Yeah, well, Tesla wouldn't be the first to do that. My insurer offered that to me. They offered me to give me like have an app on my phone, and they're gonna be tracking my driving through the app, and they're gonna adjust my insurance with that. I said no, thank you. But it is an option, I know, with some insurers to do that. So it looks like Tesla wants to do it, and they can do it more directly with your car itself. So when they sell you the car, they say, "Hey, You want some varied like premium rates for your insurance through a program that's going to monitor your driving." And some people are just like they want a very simple A to B car, and they don't care about being tracked the performance. So I'm sure it's going to be fine. But other Tesla owners who buy the car for the performance of the vehicle, I think they won't find many many sales with that, I think.
Yeah.
Another thing that was mentioned by Elon during the earnings calls is that he sort of said that they're going to keep the $35,000 Model 3 option through through the like of the menu item, they're calling it like the secret menu, if you will, of Tesla car, which it's an interesting claim, something that we're going to need to follow over the next few months, because at the same time as he said that they're going to keep that, he also start to introduce us to the idea that it might be going away, because he said no one is ordering it. Then if no one is ordering it, then of course they're going to just get rid of it in a few months, I think. And their argument is going to be like, if no one is buying it, it's not worth keeping it as an option, even though it's in terms of production streamlining, it doesn't change anything because it's all software limited stuff on the car. So it's the same car that they're producing. But yeah, of course they're not, no one is buying it because you're not, it's not even on the website. It's not something that they're pushing at all. And Elon argued that you don't have to go through an obstacle course to buy it. So that's, of course he said that in a cheeky way, but it's, that shouldn't be your baseline for, listing an option, not through, right. Not having to go through an obstacle course to find the option. If it's an option, it should be listed on the website. That's it. I mean, I don't get that argument at all. Of course I know what they're doing. I mean, they cannot produce the car at a profit. So they are pushing for the higher price version, but still, I mean.
So I am a little bit more optimistic, I think, on the $35,000 Model 3 than Jamie or you, I think. I think that Tesla found that they couldn't make they needed to get that $35,000 Model 3 out so that they get the deposits and all that stuff and down payments. They kind of needed the cash earlier than they probably had anticipated. I think they probably wanted to release it in July, maybe. So I think that they are continuing to get the price to come down, for making, you know, the cost of each car is coming down a little bit. The more they make, the longer they do it. I think eventually they'll make enough of a margin on a $35,000 base model, that they can actually sell a $35,000 Model 3 at a reasonable profit, and they may even bring it back to the website. But I agree with you, it doesn't look good. You know, like, there you used to be able to call Tesla and get through to an operator pretty quickly ever since the Model 3 came out and they you know, quadrupled their sales. It takes like a half hour to reach a human being no matter which button you push. So saying like, you know, you can order something on the website in under 2 minutes versus I got to wait a half hour on the phone to get something. That's not quite the same thing.
And of course, the hypocrisy here, of course, is that Elon says you don't have to go through an obstacle course. You just have to call someone at Tesla or go to a store. He says that, and then 10 minutes later he says, we are moving all sales online because online is the best way to sell and everything. So, like, it's one or the other. So if you know that it's so much easier online, then it means it's that much difficult offline. And if you're putting the car on the offline, it's because you don't want to sell it. It's going away basically. But I agree with your point. Over the long term, if Tesla does achieve more economies of scales and bring the price down and everything, maybe they're going to bring it back or maybe not. It's just, I just don't like the move to start with. Any type of off the menu item makes a little sense to me.
You know, I'll go back to this. I've talked about this before. I don't know why there must always be chaos there. Like, it just feels like you've got a really great product. The Model 3 is an amazing product. Everybody that rides in it, everybody that drives it is like, this is the future of cars. Most people that I've driven with are like, this is the best car I've ever driven in. Mm-hmm. Just make a lot of those cars. Don't like make too many of them. Don't make too little of them. Just focus on getting those cars correct. You've got a new model coming out. Like, messing with the price, messing with the, you know, all this other stuff is just like, why throw chaos into it? Why give, you know, why, you know, be an idiot on Twitter? I mean, I'm an idiot on Twitter. You're an idiot on Twitter sometimes. Everybody's an idiot on Twitter, but you're the head of the company. Stop being an idiot on Twitter. Just make really good Model 3s. And I think you told me this like earlier, like he has a great Twitter following. Like you can do a lot of positive without doing mm-hmm. so much negative on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like they're creating all this chaos, and specifically Elon's creating a lot of chaos when they've got a great product, they've got a great roadmap. Like everybody should like be excited about it, and yet the stock is going down. They didn't do great on deliveries last quarter, but I mean the fundamentals are strong.
So. The product is strong, like you said. The product is the main thing. I mean, company is built around a product, and nothing is better than Model 3, in my opinion. I mean, just you were saying like how many people are convinced to buy the Model 3. Just last weekend, I went to a friend's house, and there were three of my friends there. One of them, I loaned my Model 3 through the winter when I was in California, and now he's looking every day. He's on the Tesla website trying to convince his wife to let him buy the car and everything. And then the two other friends were there that I never driven my one of them I threw in my Model S, but my Model 3. I let them both drive my Model 3, and as soon as they get out of the car, that's going to be my next car for sure. I need to figure out a way to get that car. So it sells itself, really. Greatest product ever. But yeah, there's a lot of unnecessary like misstep that Tesla is taking, and Elon on Twitter might be one of those missteps. I mean, we can address what happened this week real quick if you guys want to. Like, Elon went on Twitter and we had a little exchange for a while where he called me anti-Tesla, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean, especially you guys on the podcast know that I do criticize Tesla a lot, especially in the last few months, but you have to give it to me. Like, the last few months have been pretty chaotic. Tesla has done some bad moves. I'm just criticizing those bad moves. But overall, I'm way more pro Tesla than anything else. I mean, I own two Teslas. I've owned the stock forever. I've helped sell hundreds, if not thousands, of Tesla vehicles. I've been overly positive on a bunch of other aspects of the company, and I just love their product and I love their mission. So calling me anti-Tesla because I criticize a few of their moves is a really bad look on Elon, I think, and it shows that he has a lot of difficulty taking criticism. But on the Twitter point that you brought up, the amount of hate that I receive from just Elon calling me anti-Tesla and just like putting a target on my head saying that I'm the enemy with his 25 million following on Twitter, I just got a ton of hate from it from all directions. And if I was myself like 2 years ago, getting that kind of amount of hate online would have crushed me, really. It would have plunged me into a depression. I would have being in a very bad situation. Now, I mean, with the rise of electric, I started getting used to the hate. Normally, I get it more from the other side of the spectrum, though. I get it from the Tesla shorts and those people. So they've prepared me for it really over the years with a good ramp up. And people like Seth was sort of used to being a public figure for a while, and other people in the community too, like Mark Gurman also helped me out on all through. And all that stuff. So big thanks to Seth and Mark and other people that helped me out on that front. So now I was able, like within an hour, I was over it and everything. But I can see when he goes against other people though, and he can go a lot harder than just calling that person anti-Tesla and being a little bit snarky about it with his hello Fred and whatnot. But I can see how hard it could be on those people. So I don't think there's any value in that. I don't think you should spend any time on that, on any kind of negativity on Twitter, and just use his massing following to just keep posting positive stuff and about Tesla. And that alone will help sell a lot more than creating any kind of controversy on that stuff, especially something that's stupid, that just painting me as an enemy of Tesla when it couldn't be further from the truth, really. Oh boy. Anyway, that's just let's be done with Twitter for now, unless there's another Twitter stuff that that Elon that we reported on this week. I mean, it's great for business. We have to say, like, Elon on Twitter is great for business in the media world. We have to admit that. But I wouldn't be down. I would be down for a few some fewer posts about Elon's Twitter than and some more positivity on that front. Model Y production. During the call, last thing about the call, Elon mentioned that they haven't settled on the Model Y production location yet. In the past, they've said that it was most likely going to be the Gigafactory 1. Now they say that it's still a close tie between California and Nevada, which meant Fremont or Gigafactory 1 in Sparks. Previously, we thought that it wasn't even a possibility in Fremont because the place is just full right now.
It's packed.
Packed.
So, so what would they do? Like, they move Model S and X out, or they just compact? I mean, they think the Model Y is going to sell more than the Model S, X, and 3 together.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do they? Like in their wildest dreams, imagine that they can meet that kind of production at just the Fremont factory. It seems like something weird would have to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things that they could move probably. You know, I mentioned some warehouse space that they use at Fremont that they could just move out and do production lines there, yeah, which would make sense because Tesla has been buying a lot of other properties and they've been renting a lot of other properties in the Bay Area and the Fremont area. Mm-hmm. And so they could use that, move some operation there. They could move other things to like the sounds like all powertrain stuff could happen in Gigafactory at one point. So they just move. We don't know if they moved it. The front motor for the Model S and X, which we're going to get to the upgrade soon, but now that's the same as the Model 3, which was already made in Gigafactory. So, and now the Model S front motor is also made at Gigafactory 1. So they could move all that production on the drivetrain, on the powertrain stuff to Gigafactory 1 and focus more on the vehicle side of the thing. So all the powertrain could come from Gigafactory 1, then they make the vehicle from there with the platform, the body, and everything else. Final assembly basically being at Fremont. So that's all a possibility. The other thing that makes sense making at Fremont, which I think is the biggest thing where they have difficulties just green lighting, making Model Y at Gigafactory 1, is because it shares 70% of the part with Model 3.
Right. That does make a lot of sense.
So you want to probably make it in the same place. You could technically probably make it on the same line, really. You just have to figure out a way to increase those part production a lot, because like you said, Model Y is going to be a high volume vehicle program. So but one of the biggest issue really, if you go to Fremont during every day's a weekday there, parking lot is full. It's always full. These 10,000 plus employees there working on several shifts, and then you add another vehicle program in there, there's going to be even more people working there. So that alone, like, can it support that many employees? Big question there. But then you go from that to Gigafactory 1. So putting Model Y production there going to increase the headcount a lot there too. And you have plenty of space there, Gigafactory 1, but you don't have access to that much of a workforce. The workforce issue is a big problem in Gigafactory 1, where you need to convince people to come work in the middle of the desert and in Nevada. I mean, you're pretty close to Reno, but Reno itself is not that big of a city with that big of a technical workforce. And
it's growing because not just Tesla, but Google and Apple and mm-hmm. Amazon and Facebook are all throwing in data centers and stuff there.
Yeah, but data centers, of course, they don't have the same kind of headcount as a massive manufacturing plant like Tesla Gigafactory 1. So it is an issue of employment there. So honestly, I'm glad that I don't have that problem to solve. I think it's a big one, and I think that's why Tesla is still not convinced on where they're going to produce the Model Y, still trying to solve that issue. And they're cutting close. I mean, they're claiming that car is going to go in volume production in the fall of 2020. That's just like 18 months away or something.
Not even.
So Yeah, like 16 months. It's insane that they are going to cut it close. But again, the 70% part share with Model 3 is going to help on that front. Maybe I have a few other things that are going to help. But well, you did say next few weeks, right? Very soon? Next few weeks, yeah. You said in the next few weeks they should announce it. So at least that's going to be behind us. No, no. Now let's go back in time. That was Wednesday. Everything happening on Wednesday. Now let's go back to Monday, where Tesla had the autonomy event. Already 30 minutes in. Now we could do an hour, I think, just on the autonomy event. Was a lot. Did you watch all the presentations, Seth?
I not in order. I kind of just jumped in and jumped out. Jumped in and jumped out.
I went through the whole thing, and it was fascinating. Really, a lot of very great presentation throughout the day. A lot of very smart people that were showcased there. I think they got a great showcase because let me take a look at the YouTube video, because it was like a deep dive stuff in both the hardware and the software. That video has 1.5 million views on YouTube right now.
And I think that was re-uploaded later after.
Yeah. If you add everything, it's probably well over 2 million at some point. But For a deep dive like that, I think it's the first time that some people got a very good idea of what it takes to reach level 5 full autonomy, and Tesla's approach to it, which is widely different from the rest of the market, if you ask me. At first, it started with a presentation about Tesla's hardware, specifically the new FSD computer with Tesla's proprietary chip. Proprietary chip. Thank you. And Pete Bannon did the presentation on that. He's the head of Autopilot Hardware right now. He's the guy that they brought in from Apple. He was a chip architect at Apple. He was brought in with Jim Keller back in 2015, I think, to develop Tesla's own hardware for Autopilot, because at that time, of course, they were working with Mobileye and then NVIDIA. And he went deep in details on why they developed their own chip, which I don't think any other automaker is doing. Then how they developed the chip and how they achieved the result. I won't go into the details on how they did it, because he did a 45 minutes presentation on it, and I wouldn't do it justice at all, because it's really not my expertise. Maybe you're a little bit more connoisseur than me on that set. But did you watch this one, the presentation?
Which one?
The FSD one, the hardware one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very interesting stuff, but you need to watch it if you're into that stuff. It's hard to follow for some, for sure, if you don't have any engineering background, especially in chip architecture. But in terms of the actual result of it, they're claiming a 20-time increase in frame per second processing from the hardware 2.5, which again was the NVIDIA hardware. And that 21-time increase, that increased by a factor of 21, came with only a 25% increase in power consumption. And, of course, that's a big deal, because you have an electric car. The ultimate goal of that, of course, we're going to get into that, is the Tesla network with a shared fleet of autonomous electric vehicles. And the goal of that is to reduce the cost per mile of operation at all. That's the holy grail of mobility, basically. I have a shared fleet of electric autonomous vehicle. That's going to reduce the cost of mobility for everyone by a lot. It's going to reduce emissions by a lot. So you want those two things. And to achieve those two things, you need the autonomy aspect to be achieved with lower power consumption, because that's going to affect your efficiency, that's going to affect the range of the car, that's going to affect the cost of operation of the car. And they achieved a 20 factor 21 increase in frame per second processing with only a 25% power consumption. That's amazing, really. It's 72 watts. It's the FSD is thinking. They also had the cost decrease. So that's one of the big things. Like Tesla making their own chip that must be like crazy expensive and everything. They claim that the full computer costs 80% of the cost of the hardware 2.5 computer. Excuse me. So that's we don't know the cost of that. Some people were estimating like around $2,000 of the 2.5. So 80% of that is 1,600. But Pete Bannon said that it's going to, the decrease in cost is going to cover the cost of the development of the chip. I don't know how much it costs to develop a chip, but I have to assume it's the maybe hundreds of million, tens of millions.
Probably. I mean, so yeah, just to clarify, like they're not actually printing the chip. I think Samsung in Texas is going to be actually like building the hardware of the chip, but designing the chip, which is the important part, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And also to just clarify, NVIDIA came out with a blog post after the event saying, you know, we agree with Tesla on 98% of what they said, like autonomy's, this is how it is going to work. And, you know, the chips, but they were like, well, frankly, our chips are quite quick and they were using our last generation to compare and their new generation's a little faster. So they had some, you know, clarifications. I still think Tesla and NVIDIA kind of, they had a good friendship going there. I'm surprised that they built their own chips, but, I mean, it's quite amazing that Tesla, like an automobile company, is able to build its own chip. Like, that's just like an incredible.
Well, they did hire a whole full team of chip architects, really.
Right. I mean, back when we actually broke the story of Jim Keller coming to Tesla, we were like, it can't be for a chip. like, why would Tesla be doing its own chip?
Yeah.
This is like three years ago.
2 years ago.
So it's pretty interesting to see this whole thing play out. And, you know, to write this week where, like, it's been fully laid out that this was the big plan all along. And
People, you know, said we're crazy if we think that Tesla's developing their own chip. I mean,
right.
2 years ago.
And we thought we were...
Oh, yeah. We suggested it because we said, like, yeah, if you hire Jim Keller and then Pete Bannon and then dozen other chip architects, I mean, what else you're doing, really? But even then, we were like, we're still skeptical. I mean, they have great engineering talent that could be leveraged for other things and whatnot. We made sure to add that in our article, but at the same time, we're like, they have to be making a chip at this point. But yeah, to your point about NVIDIA, they did argue against some of Tesla's claim about being better at operation per seconds. They argue that Tesla misrepresented the stats there. But even if they did a little bit, they tried to compare Tesla's FSD computer to their custom build for autonomy computer, which is the AGX Pegasus computer. But that computer takes 500 watts of computing power, which is not really efficient at all. And it's not, Tesla wouldn't even consider that computer. So it's comparing oranges to apples, basically. There were a few other cool things and during the day. So that was really P. Bannon's presentation. Then it went on to Andrew Kuperty, which was the head of AI at Tesla. And he went into all the computer vision aspect of, because Pete Bannon is the hardware side. He's not just the software side, Andrew Kuperty. He's the AI machine learning neural net system. He's building that. Then there was also like the englobing software side of it, which was Stuart Bauer's presentation, which include more about taking that capacity of computer vision and transforming it into actual consumer features, driver assist features that will eventually lead to fully self-driving. But coming back to Kuperty's presentation, Kuperty sounds like a pretty smart guy to me. Again, it was a deep dive. It was a 45-minute, hour-long presentation, so a lot of stuff there. But the guy might be on top of the game when it comes to computer vision based on the neural network. A few interesting things that I want to mention that we didn't know exactly about was one feature that I found relying in the neural net system, because they kept emphasizing that Tesla's big advantage, other than the focusing on computer vision, is the fleet, having access to the whole fleet and all the data that's coming from the fleet. That's very valuable because it's all real world stuff instead of being simulation based, which doesn't give you those hot things that happen in the world. So there was a big focus on that. And one of the things that I found fascinating is that they have a way when they do see something weird, example was a bike. Well, it's not that weird, but it's weird for computer vision. A bike at the back of a car, so it's mounted on the back of the car. The computer would detect both the bike and the car, saying that, oh, you have a bike crossing the street at the same time as a car in front of you, so you get confused from that. But in order to train the system in recognizing that, that's just, don't worry about the bike, that's just a car, they could send a request to the fleet to say, send me pictures that are similar to that picture, which in this case was a car with a bike on the back, so that you can train the network by crowdsourcing the fleet's images of a car with a bike, and then they gave a bunch of examples of that they can do, which I think very illustrated Tesla's advantage of having a huge fleet that is collecting data for everyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of untapped like opportunities, I think, there. I mean, basically, they're driving around hundreds of thousands of vehicles with cameras on all four sides that are connected via the internet to mm-hmm. Tesla at all times. I mean, that's, the opportunities there are pretty significant. So instances like that with the bike on the back of the car, I think, are just scratching the surface, really. I mean, that, you know, they're getting so much information. I feel like that parsing it is going to be the big, you know, the big data challenge. But they have the opportunity with all these cars and all these cameras and all this internet connection to get like a lot of important data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to give Tesla an advantage that, you know, Waymo is not going to have, that GM Cruise isn't going to have. I guess, you know, they do have cars with some cameras, but I don't think they're taking advantage of them in the same way. I guess Uber kind of is the same, you know, they have cars, but they don't all have cameras,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think Uber has access to most of them. So they might get like data about where the cars are, like where the slowdowns are, it's the same stuff Google has, but they're not going to really get like the visual stuff and the, you know, other sensor data.
And so, of course, the argument against that if I'm playing devil's advocate for Google here, Waymo and others, is that they have a simulation, a very good simulation, where they can throw anything at their cars through that simulation.
Right.
Then the counter argument from Elon from there, which I thought was pretty good, is that he says you cannot create a perfect simulation that can recreate everything that happens in the real world, because the real world is just that weird. It's everything happened. And then he said, if you had a simulation that could do that, then it would be proof that we do live in a simulation, because you can recreate the real world as it is with all its weirdness, which is a good point. And I mean, because you need to think about that stuff. You need to, and I can get, if you see it once in the real world, then you can try to recreate it in a simulation and then get your car system to react to it in an appropriate way. You can do that. But then you need someone to just think about every kind of scenario that happens in the world, and that no one can do that. There's not that kind of imagination out there. You really need to have a fleet of millions of vehicles out there just getting those real world thing. And of course, there's still going to be, even then, there's still going to be thing that is going to be thrown at the self-driving car that it has never seen before. Just like there's thing right now being thrown at humans driving the car that's never seen before. So, I mean, I came out at the end of the day, after all those of them thing, I already thought that Tesla should be considered to have a lead in autonomous driving. And I think the vision-based system is really the best system. But that they reinforced my view on that front, that Tesla is right with their non-lidar approach, or really just a computer vision-based approach. Because when you really think about it, there's only one system right now that is driving cars in the world. And that's a vision-based system backed by our neural net. And that's a human. We use our eyes, we use our brain. That's what it is. It's a very advanced version of it for most people. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's a pretty dumbed down version of it, and that's why we suck at driving cars. I mean, there's not that many activities out there that we do on a daily basis where we kill thousands of people every year and we just keep doing it. It just doesn't happen enough, because of course it drives our economy, so we still do it, but we suck at driving cars. That's just the truth, and we need a solution there, and full self-driving is the solution. And since we are the baseline for it, since humans are the baseline for driving, that's where we should start. So a vision-based system makes sense. We don't have a LiDAR. We don't shoot out laser out of your eyes. Though Elon hinted that maybe he can shoot out laser in his eyes. So
one of those memes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also telling, I think, that you know, somebody like Elon, who's thinking about this kind of stuff all the time, thinks that in 10 years or 20 years or whatever it is, that people are going to think it's insane that we were allowed to just drive around these, you know, whatever, 3-ton, what did he say? Like human-killing machines or big,
you know. Killing machines, multiple.
Yeah, that, and it's funny because when you look at it from that perspective, like, hey, these computers are like, you know, way less likely to get in an accident, if at all, versus like us, who, you know, we get pissed off, we get drunk, we get high, we get like distracted by pagers, mm-hmm. like all these things, let alone we're not great to begin with, comparatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just allowed to drive cars. Like, you know, I can get like, you know, something super crazy could happen to me and I can just get in my car and, you know, maybe I kill somebody. But like, there's nothing stopping me from doing mm-hmm. that. And I think, you know, if you've thought about the future a lot, like Tesla engineers and Elon have, you're like, well, it's going to be different, like in the future, and this is how it's going to be. Because, you know, if you imagine that these cars are so much better than humans at driving, like we're not going to let humans drive anymore because that's where all the deaths are going to come from. And
mm-hmm.
you know, that's kind of how they're thinking.
Yeah, that's all they're thinking, and that's how also he introduced the idea of Tesla launching a vehicle without a steering wheel within the next 2 years, he said. And they even unveil a design for a Model 3 without steering wheel. It's and then, surprise, surprise, it looks just like a Model 3 because with the symmetry of the Model 3, and you just basically have to remove the steering column and patch the hole, which Tesla said that they're going to offer as a retrofit, really. So if you want to remove your steering wheel on your car in the future when the car becomes self-driving, you can do that.
How are you going to do the volume and the... you know, that stuff from the...
Well, you're going to have to like, use... you're going to have to use the screen.
I guess you don't need windshield wipers, but...
windshield wipers is still on the screen. You don't... You don't really
need those since you're...
Yeah.
Not driving.
Yeah. On top of that, all of that cumulated, really, all of the autonomy they cumulated into Tesla releasing a new demonstration of their latest self-driving software. And they released some kind of loop driving on the highway and on side roads around Palo Alto, I think. And I saw a lukewarm reaction to it for a bit because it's extremely similar to what Tesla unveiled just 3 years ago when they launched the Autopilot 2.0. They did release a very similar demonstration to that. So the capabilities based on that don't seem to have changed that much. But that said... it looks like more of a feature complete system if you look into it. If you look at the ring, because they use a Model 3, if you look at the rendering on the center screen for it, you can see what the vehicle sees. And it looks more like a consumer-ready product, even though in the demonstration, it doesn't touch the wheel at all. Though I guess you could still have him not touch the wheel at all if it's... as long as you say that the driver is responsible and everything, I don't think you would need to touch the wheel. But with Tesla's approach to making sure that drivers stay vigilant, I think they need to make you touch the wheel. But it's going to be a very complex area to navigate in terms of regulation. So brace yourself for that. In terms of capabilities, if we focus on that... it looks consumer ready at the rendering level because you now see the intersection. The vehicle doesn't just detect the lanes. It detects if it can go right and left in intersection and go forward because you see the path of where you can drive versus where you cannot drive based on the black or blue and gray zone in the rendering, which is great. You also see the stoplight. You see the traffic lights. That's also new. The path planning is also different on the screen. It's not just when you click navigate on autopilot and you have that line that appears on autopilot. Now you also have some kind of blue lanes on it. The lanes become blue. So not sure what's that about though. In terms of the actual driving performance, like I said, very similar to the one from 2 years ago. So that's where the more lukewarm reaction is to it. But it was smooth, was really smooth. Both on the highway, on the side roads. Entering the highway through the ramp was also smooth, which I used Navigate on Autopilot just last week to go out to Chamonix again and performed extremely well. It was the current version is very top-notch. I even did a full 360 loop on the highway and on an off-ramp and then an on-ramp loop. And it managed the whole thing with the path planning, the blind path planning that they call it, because they assume more that if it's a whole loop, then the camera cannot see ahead. So it has to plan ahead based on the curvature of the road, and did that perfectly, really. Before, I would always like correct it at some point because I'm afraid you're thinking too fast. Anyway, at the end of the day, people, though, if you're using autopilot, keep your hands on the wheel, be ready to take control because it's still not perfect. We don't want anyone to get hurt. You're still in beta, beta software. Both auto steer, which is what? Four years old at this point? It's still in beta at 4 years old, so be careful with it. Navigating autopilot is, of course, a lot newer, but it's also in beta. Robotaxi. Tesla Network, there was a the presentation. So the presentation went Pete Bannon, Andrew Capertee, Stuart Bowers. And then Elon was like interjecting in there a few times and everything. But at the end, he did his own presentation. And his own presentation focused on Tesla Network. So the fleet, the shared fleet and everything. And he even released some screenshot of what the app's going to look like, which is interesting. And he says that it's going to be on the same app. So Tesla already has its own app for car owners where you need a Tesla account for it, but with your Tesla account, you can manage your cars and everything. Now you won't need to own the car because you can just get on it. If you don't own a car and you get on the Tesla app, it's just going to be like a Uber app, basically. You can call a car to come to you. It's just that there's not going to be anyone in that car. And if you're a Tesla owner, then the app stays the same, but you could have a tab for that app and you can not only call a car for yourself, or you can add your car to the network in order to earn revenue. And that's where things get a little bit crazy. Because he did some kind of back of the napkin map on what the economics of having your car on the Tesla network would look like. And in short, he estimated that it's a gross profit of $30,000 per year per car, which might be on the optimistic side of the spectrum, if you ask me.
Like if you live in a very expensive place and your car is doing a lot of work, I guess theoretically that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do people tip RoboTaxi?
Great service, RoboTaxi. I mean, the service should be quite consistent, if you ask me. But so some of the numbers here. If you look at, he used the AAA numbers, I think, for the average cost of ownership of a car, which he put at 60 cents per mile. And then if you look at the ride-sharing cost, it's between $2 and $3 per mile. He estimated that the cost of... Now he's referring to it as robo-taxi. Well, the Tesla network going to consist of a robo-taxi, which is an electric autonomous car. I think they're mostly using the Model 3 because they're talking about the cost of less than $38,000, which I think is only a Model 3 for Tesla at this point. He's talking about 18 cents per mile, or less than 18 cents per mile, which is a big difference, of course. Now, that's based on a few things, though. That's based on a new battery pack that's going to be a million-mile battery pack. So that was another announcement during the Autonomy Day. Because, of course, if you don't have a driver, then the cost per mile just That's a big part of cost per mile going down. That's easy. The other aspect is gas. So there's big fuel savings by being electric. That's great. Also, Tesla is very efficient, so electricity costs are low. But then the other aspect is maintenance. Maintenance is a big thing for ride-sharing vehicles because they do a lot of mileage. So you want something that's going to last long. And Tesla says that, oh, we already designed the Model 3 to be like a commercial-level vehicle that lasts a million miles. The drivetrain lasts a million miles. But they said the only thing that's not a million miles is the battery pack, which Elon previously mentioned, like 300,000 to 500,000 miles, which is pretty damn good. But he says that next year they're going to have a new battery pack coming that's going to last a million miles.
How do they get to a million miles? From, like, is it a new chemistry? Is it like...
It has to be.
There was some hedging there. It's like, it'll last a million miles. You might have to do that, you know, something to it.
I missed that.
If you listen, I remember him hedging a little bit after he said the million mile.
I think he doesn't want people to just wait for that million miles batch pack in order to buy. So yeah, that's not an idea. But to your question,
no cobalt or like how do you get to a million miles on a battery pack?
Well, that has to be a new chemistry for sure, and I think. Well, we've seen recent patents filed by Tesla in terms of the battery level with based on Jeff Dunn's research. Jeff Dunn out of Halifax, a Canadian researcher that has a partnership with Tesla to develop battery cells with more longevity. So it looks like Tesla made some significant development recently on longevity. Then there's a Maxwell thing. There's a Maxwell technology that Tesla is looking to incorporate in their battery pack. So both of those things either combine or individually should result in a significant increase in longevity. And so that might be how they achieve that. But they haven't achieved it yet. And they're taking it into account in those, again, back-of-the-napkin calculation. And even Elon himself admitted that they kind of threw in a bunch of number out there, just like the $1 per mile of... Because that 18 cents... And then that's a big one. Because okay, let's say that Tesla does achieve the 18 cents, but then how do you price the for the end consumer and now the per mile? Because that's going to be hard to price, because if you compete with the current ride-sharing price... Then it's easy, like $2 to $3. You can squash that. You can go to $1.50 if you want. He said $1 per mile, but you could go as close as $2, and people will still use one because I mean, most people don't want to talk to their Uber drivers and everything like that. So it's not like having a driver is a added value. It's really just based on cost, really. And where am I going with this? Oh yeah. So how do you come to that dollar per mile number? If there's competition, though, that's what's going to drive the actual price per mile of a ride-shared autonomous fleet. And so if Waymo is in the game at this point, if Cruise is in the game at this point, then it's going to be a free-for-all and it's going to be a market aspect to that pricing. But if Tesla is really alone on it, then they can set whatever price they want. But an 18 cents to a dollar, an 18 cents cost to a dollar price, I mean, that's a pretty good gross margin, really. And Elon did say that Tesla's going to take as much as 30%, I think. I think he said as much as 30% of the revenue from those. He said it's like the Apple Store model. And I think Apple do take 30% of the apps?
Yes.
Yes, okay. But yeah... Then he referenced to what would it look like for Tesla itself in terms of revenue, and he sees having a million cars that are ready for self-driving by the end of next year. Though again, we went over that real quick, but the regulations are going to make it very difficult. So a per market basis, there's not going to be one day as soon as Tesla is a feature ready. It's not going to be like end of the day there's a million cars that are fully self-driving. It's going to be a per jurisdiction based on regulators. So it might be like a few hundred thousand cars there, a few hundred thousand cars there is better. So maybe not even because it might not be on the federal level of the U.S. It might be on the state level. So anyway, he sees a rapid growth to having 10 million cars in 10 years, resulting in tens of billions of dollars in revenue per year from those cars. So he sees, of course, a very good revenue model for Tesla there. But he's trying to, he was trying to convince people to change that into it being a reason to buy the car right now, because the hardware is there right now. So that revenue generation potential of those cars exists now and should be factored in into the cost of the price of the vehicle, the value of the vehicle, I should say. So right now you can buy for less than $50,000, you can buy a Model 3 with full self-driving, basically. And he estimated the value of that car being over $200,000. So he's basically telling you that you can buy a car right now that's actually worth four times what you pay for it.
Remains to be seen.
You think so?
Optimistically speaking.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if full self-driving happens for Tesla within that timeline, he's completely right. I mean, it does work like that. But at the same time, you buy that $50,000 car right now, and then in 3 months try to sell it. You won't sell it for more than $50,000. You're gonna lose a lot of value for it. That I'm sure. So it still doesn't work like that. And he says that it's a value appreciating asset now because they're gonna increase the price of the full self driving, which is fair. But unless they increase it like drastically, like 3-4 times, forget it. You won't see any value appreciation over time, until they do actually release that full self-driving capability, which, again, remains to be seen, even though I think if someone can do it, it's going to be Tesla. All right, it's already 5 o'clock, so we need to work through those things a little faster. Though we already went through a few of those articles, I can move on. We move on to Tuesday when Tesla released the upgraded drivetrain and suspension for Model S and X. So if you've been following Electric for the past few weeks, we've been talking about it. That was the Project Raven that we mentioned a few weeks ago. Tesla changed the front motor on the Model S and X with the new permanent magnet reluctance motor that you already see on Model 3. We knew that's going to be an increase in efficiency that's going to translate to an increase in range without changing the battery pack, but we didn't know by how much exactly. Tesla says it's over 10%.
Which is significant.
I mean, significant, yeah.
You know, the Model S and X were already quite efficient. I mean, not compared to the Model 3, mm-hmm. but like just generally speaking. So a 10% improvement in an electric motor is impressive, because electric motors are 90x% efficient already. So we're getting, you know, we're knocking pretty close on 100%, I feel like, at this point. So, you know, that's fantastic for the new Model S and X. That being said, I don't know if Tesla is done upgrading the Model S and X for this year.
They're not. They're definitely
not. It sounds like some more upgrades are in the pipeline. But as we know, Tesla doesn't do updates, or they don't do
refreshes.
So there are going to be some smaller updates coming probably.
We keep joking about that, but that's pretty much, they pretty much made it through. Like, because we weren't sure. We've been talking about a battery pack upgrade coming from Model S and X too. We think that's still coming. And the interior refresh, we know it's still coming. But we weren't sure how they're going to release it in terms of timeline. It's going to bundle it up altogether, which would have made it a refresh. But now, don't you think that if they do release it like piece by piece like that, the drivetrain, the powertrain, and then the interior, does it count over time as a refresh? Or if it doesn't happen at the same time, is it still a refresh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, me either. But yeah, the drivetrain increase, 370 miles of range for the long-range Model S, 325 for the Model X.
And I think Motor Trend drove one from Fremont to, or somewhere in the valley, to LA, and they had some range left. So now you can officially do that, although the Roadster upgrade would allow you to do that already. So really, it's not that big a deal, but it is a milestone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Tesla even needed more range than they already had for that. But I mean, so I'm more excited about the efficiency gain that the drivetrain brought in, because Tesla already had a massive efficiency lead over competitors, and they just bumped that up.
And that means you're charging when you're at a charging station. even with the same kilowatts, you're going to be 10% further along in your mileage exactly. than you were in the older vehicle.
And so that charge rate also increased with the update. Now they are up to 200 kilowatts. It's not the 250 right. of the Model 3, which is weird because, of course, Model S and X are the flagship vehicles. You'd think that they have the same or higher charge rate than Model 3, but it's not the case. We think that's coming with a powertrain update within the next few months, or at least by the end of the year, with an upgrade to the 2170 chip architecture that we discussed, I think it was last week or the week before that. While we're on the subject, real quick, Panasonic did mention that they are looking to upgrade their 18650 production line in Japan, which are currently supplying Model S and X. They said that they are thinking about investing into upgrading into 2070 cells, which would basically confirm the move of Model S and X, because then they wouldn't have those cells. So unless Tesla is looking to buy 1860 cells from someone else for Model S and X and use the line in Japan for the Model 3, which sounds unlikely, but still a possibility. So it's not 100% confirmed, but it's looking more and more confirmed. All right, coming back.
It would be crazy for Tesla not to go to 2170 cells in their high-end product, clearly are superior.
Yeah, but we've been saying that for 2 years, and they still hold on to it for 2 years. So we, at the same time, we don't know. A new fully adaptive suspension for Model S and X that was released with the update. Now they're going to be able to upgrade the software, the suspension, to have a more adaptive system. Base wheelpower wheel, so that's going to make it for a smoother ride. Could also be integrated into the track mode for a more sportive ride on the track, more dynamic driving and everything. So very cool on that front. Few other things. New tire design for improved range, ride and steering. New wheel bearing. That's about it for that. And all right, so when Tesla found a way to make existing owner happy, because of course every time Tesla introduced an upgrade on their existing vehicle line, owners that recently bought the cars are upset because I should have waited and I could have getting the upgrade and everything. So what Tesla did is that for existing owner, they offered the ludicrous that's just for performance owners though. Okay, is it? Yeah, I think so. Let me make sure that, because I just thought about it, if it makes sense or not.
We should probably try to get to the last step. We're about 10 minutes over now.
Yeah, I know. Just for Model S and X, along with a few improvements. Yeah, it's performance car. Sorry, performance car. They offered a ludicrous mode upgrade for free, which they say is worth $20,000. All right, if you can get
existing owners.
Come again?
For existing owners.
If you get that, that's great, everything. But I'd be careful on the value of it, like $20,000. It's not if you want to upgrade to a new car right now, worth $20,000. But if you remember a few months back when Tesla changed the lineup on Model S and X, they made it so that the ludicrous update is a software update right now. It's not what it was before with a new conductor, with air canal to have a higher amperage of the battery pack to get more performance. Now, all Model S and X performance are the same car, and ludicrous update is a software update. But Tesla is charging $20,000 for that software update, which is quite a bit insane. And you just basically get a higher power output for higher acceleration, but that's it. So if you're into that stuff, I mean, go for it. Otherwise, it would cost you $20,000, but I would be careful in terms of upgrading just for that, in terms of actual value for, especially resale value.
All right. And last we saw a little bit more of the Roadster. It looks like one of the investors at the event got some video of the door opening and also the rear seats, which we haven't quite seen in the light yet. They seemed kind of like a prototype. They didn't even match the front seats, which are white. The rear seats are gray. And they look like the kind of bucket seats you'd see in the back of a Corvette or a similar sports car that doesn't really have a rear seating area, but they kind of put one in for insurance purposes or that emergency run when you have an extra person or two that you need to throw in the car. but really nobody's going to want to sit in the back for long periods of time, except maybe some young children.
Yeah. Oh, are you getting one for your Roadster? You want the SpaceX package, or you want the back seats?
I don't know if we're getting Roadsters, dude. if there is a Roadster in my future, I'm not buying one. I'm not a $250,000 car person, but I'm not getting the SpaceX package. I will probably just put some advertising on it and drive it around.
We should also mention what was announced earlier today, where the actual V2 upgrade that was announced with V3, where Tesla is increasing the power output of the existing supercharger V2, which there already are thousands of them deployed, won't be 140 kilowatts, but 150 kilowatts. So they did found a little more power output there. And that's being enabled right now for Model S and X with 100 kilowatt battery pack and Model 3 long range. So all of those vehicles now can charge basically everywhere, almost every supercharger at 150 kilowatts, which I think is a bigger deal than the supercharger V3, at least in the short term, because even though supercharger V3 can charge at 250, there's not that many of them on there. So for the short term, that's a bigger deal. And also,
when will people get those upgrades? Because
it's rolling out right now, apparently.
Yeah, so a couple weeks maybe.
And that's coming for Model S and X with the en route battery warm up. So if you put the supercharger location in your navigation system, the battery management system is going to take that into account and prepare the battery for charging so that you can reach the higher charge rate faster, which is a brilliant feature that. Sort of the kind of feature that why no one thought of it before kind of thing. And it's a big part of the reason that's accelerating the time per charge Tesla. And finally, thanks a lot for everyone that's still listening. But real quick on that last news was kind of a big news too. Ford announced a $500 million investment in Rivian. Rivian is, of course, the electric pickup truck startup that we've been covering for a while now. They took a $700 million investment from Amazon just a few months ago. Now a $500 million investment from Ford to help them get to production with their vehicle platform and their pickup truck and SUV coming next year. But along with that, they announced that they're going to partner up on an electric vehicle that's going to be a Ford brand. Well, maybe not necessarily a Ford, but it's going to be for Ford, so either Ford or Lincoln, basically. And it's going to use the Rivian electric platform. It's not going to be the F-150. So Ford already confirmed two all-electric vehicle programs, the Mustang-inspired crossover, and the Ford F-150 is going to be electric. Well, they're going to have an electric version, but they are developing their own platform for those ones, and Ford is going to use the Rivian platform for another vehicle that they are not confirming yet what it's going to be. It's kind of weird to me, man, because... I mean, Ford is obviously developing their own platform because they have the Mustang thing that they've been working on for years. Now they confirmed the F-150 a few months ago.
So I don't think Ford's doing too well with their electric stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like it's harder than we thought because they have their own thing. But then they announced just a few weeks ago that they are partnering with VW. They want to use the MEB platform of VW. Yeah, and now they want to use Rivian's platform. So they are using two other people's platform, and they say electric is the future. Electric is the future, but we want to use other people's platform because, you suck at developing your own. What's the point?
Well, I mean, if you look at their current cars, it's not a good scene.
Well,
they're a little bit, they're a little bit like VW with the press releases, like Ford's electrifying everything, but. You know, they only
hybrids, a lot of hybrids.
Right, a lot of hybrids, a lot of plug-in hybrids. So I don't know that they have a lot of full 100% battery EV stuff in their own pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe buying some of Rivian's gets them to full 100% battery EV quicker in a very important segment, which is their pickups and their like full-size SUV line. I think maybe that's their fear is that they're going to miss the boat. Tesla's going to come out with a truck and kind of do what they did in the small luxury car market, which is, similar price range. So they want to have something that they can kind of counter to that.
What, bring to market sooner? Yeah,
because I don't think Ford is as far along as they need to be in their electrification at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think... And it's also interesting to note that there were plenty of rumors that GM was talking to Rivian. So I think Rivian came to this negotiation from a point of power, and they probably got a pretty good deal from Ford.
No.
So that, you know,
yeah, they weren't begging for money here. They just signed $700 million from Amazon, and they already had raised like $500 million at this point. Apparently, they are backed by the Saudi, though, the Saudis. If you're not into that, maybe you should know that. But my big picture take on this is that it's great for Rivian. Another $500 million for investment going to help them bring their car to market. Not as great for Ford, because it looks weak on their side that they need another company to develop the platform for them. They need two companies. They need VW. They need Rivian. So it looks weak on their part, I think. And as for the EV market as a whole, not that big of a news, I think, in terms like it's not going to increase EV adoption that much, because the way they made it sound, I was on the call with the media for it, and the way they made it sound, so Rivian has a 250,000 vehicle capacity at their factories in Illinois right now, and they're going to produce their platform for Ford. So it's just not going to be cars that they're going to sell directly to consumers, just going to sell them to Ford, and Ford's going to sell them. So I'm not sure how big of an impact it has to actually EV adoption if Rivian is not selling those cars themselves, is just going to sell them to Ford. Basically, Ford's going to just build their car on top of the existing platform. So I was a little disappointed on that. I thought it was just going to have added capacity, which would have been great, but it doesn't sound like that. But either way, it solidified Rivian a little bit, so I feel a little better about my reservation for it, because it sounds like they have a better chance to bring it to market. But that's about it for Ford. I'm like, All right, that's about it for us this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening on YouTube. Thanks a lot for listening on your audio podcast. And we're going to see you same time next week. Bye-bye.